The Robert Scott the Bell Robert Show.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
Wake up,
good morning, Vietnam!
Rise and shining. Wakey, waking.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to you.
And you.
And you.
Robert Scott Bell. You are listening to the Robert Scott Bell Show.
The voice of health, freedom, and liberty, Robert Scott Bell.
You've heard about low T? Well, we got testosterone in abundance this hour. Liam Schiff, the conspiracy realist, joins me. And one more surprise bonus guest, a dear friend going way back to the oldies, the old days in the 90s. Before I was in radio, this is the guy. I blame him. That I got into radio because he encouraged me. Darn that guy. Who is he? Richard Pearl. He's a living legend in South Florida, and he joins me today on the Robert Scott Bell Show. Richard, man, I'm so glad you're here with us today.
Well, thank you very much. And by the way, I'm the other Richard Pearl, the other white meat.
The other one, huh?
He's not the PNAC Richard Pearl.
No.
That's right. We need to make that distinctively clear.
Yeah.
But yes, testosterone will be in abundance this hour. We are going to have too much fun, so bear with us on this. Richard has a natural product store, a health food store, has had for many years, Simply Natural. Also, his wife and he and others in the family have a wonderful organic restaurant in Sunrise, Florida, and it's adjacent to Simply Natural. And he's been in radio for as long as I knew him. And as I said, I was on your show years ago when we were talking homeopathy. I don't know what you did. You said, you should do this.
I was lying to you.
Evidently. But here I am all these years later, still trying to pretend I can do radio.
I really felt there should have been more tabbouleh in that appetizer, by the way. It was very good.
You know, I'm going to kill you.
We eat. It's a lovely place. Anyway, Richard, so you healthy.
You know, we should put arsenic in it, just like with the apple juice.
When you see Liam coming, the conspiracy realist, a little pepper and arsenic.
Yeah.
So, Richard, health food, we can talk health, healing, supplements, we can talk
cha-ching.
Money. That's right. Economics, we can talk politics as well. This is something, you know, when I talk about healing on the Robert Scott Bell Show, it's about everything, political, economic, as well as physiological, emotional, mental, even spiritual. So everything's fair game today, just to let you know, the ground rules, there are none. No holds barred, and we're going to let loose. So on the front of economics and politics, you started out as what you would call a liberal in the political spectrum.
Self-described.
What did that mean, though?
Limp-wristed.
Well, now it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
I was never metrosexual.
No.
I can't even spell that.
He can't dress himself. He's like me. His wife has to pick
out
his clothes.
My wife does.
You look good.
Yeah. Thank you. Do you want a date?
No.
So anyway, where were we?
Well, Richard, we were on the subject of the political divide. You know,
well, first of all, this whole idea of liberal conservative is nonsensical. It's designed to keep people apart. It's almost like the Willie Lynch period back 300 years ago, where, you know, Willie Lynch got on the I forget which river, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, he got out there and he basically said, if you want your slaves to be controlled, then you have to have them distrust each other. So they had the dark skin not trust the light not trust the dark, the women not trust the men, etc. And we're doing the same thing now with the whole liberal idea and conservative, or we're doing it with progressives and right-wing Tea Partiers and, you know, everybody else. It's designed to make us all separate and not look at the real cause of problems. We're focusing on the distraction.
Yeah, in other words, in that way, we can be controlled, manipulated.
It was a James River, by the way.
Sure. And so, politically speaking, a lot of these labels are devoid of meaning now.
And you know, it takes an interesting side because, you know, if you start off with a premise and you don't challenge that premise, if you just accept it as true, then everything else follows that line. So, for instance, if we say that Republicans eat their young, if you take that premise as true, then no matter what they say, it'll all be evil, because at the end, the conclusion has to be that Republicans are bad because they eat their young. So you have to make sure that the premise is true in the first place. Otherwise, because everything else is false.
Well, it's kind of like the debate the other night with Ron Paul amongst all of these other so-called Republicans, and Wolf Blitzer asked him the question. So you would let somebody die without insurance? What is this? He's a physician. He's treated people for free. And, of course, he says no, and he goes on. But the headlines now from the so-called self-proclaimed right. liberal left, they're jumping on it to say Ron Paul is cruel and heartless when he's the only guy that really understands the freedom to give charity, to help people in ways where the government tends to get in the way. And there's this assumption that only the socialism, if you will, can protect us, can keep us well, can care for the poor, whereas hospitals used to be able to give their services away for free, these religious hospitals as such.
Right. And, you know, the funny thing is that, again, it's a premise. They start off things with, you know, with the assumption that Ron Paul wants to murder people, even though he's delivered 4,000 babies, or that the front runner,
yes, that word, front runner,
is such and such. Or that some guy is not electable. And, of course, if you're trying to be a journalist, you wouldn't use words that are creating such an emotion. You would say, this candidate says this, mm-hmm. and this candidate says that. But the whole idea is to get you into a belief system. And, of course, if you don't challenge it, if you assume that Rick Perry is the front runner because it's parroted all over television,
right.
then, of course, everybody else doesn't count.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, you being in talk radio, health radio, as well as political talk radio, you certainly know how to give rise to emotional responses out there. And you defy the description. As we talk about liberal, conservative, what does it mean anymore? But there are issues that are so muddied, and then we find out that Obama came in and he basically doubled down on George Bush. He's
right.
doing everything times 10. And so at this point, isn't it time the electorate does wake up and see there is no difference?
Well, I find it interesting that guys like Bill Maher have so much problem with Obama, but he still believes in him.
Politically incorrect guy, right?
Right, right. Maher, yeah. A lot of these guys will do that. They'll see that he doubled down on Bush. And they'll even say it, but in the next breath, there's a disconnect, and they're essentially saying, well, it's still okay because I like them.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. It's not important to be right. It's important to be a critical thinker. And this is what's lost on people today. Everybody is a cheerleader for a side. I get that, but it's stupid. At the end of the day, you don't win by being right. You win by being critical. You have to look at what's in front of you and then make decisions out of it.
You just picked up on a theme we've been covering, Liam and I, for a while now, this idea of critical thinking, asking questions, right? The elitist in media, those that are aligned with the military and pharmaceutical industrial complex do not want you to ask questions about anything, whether it be 9/11 or whether it be about Gardasil, HPV shot.
Right.
And so, you know, my outrageous statement the other day was like, stop thinking, stop asking questions. You people are making it difficult for us to inject your children with experimental medications. So what are you doing? And, of course, it's obvious what they're trying to do. They're not going to say stop thinking, but that's really what they're trying to do.
Well, we don't think. We really don't think. There's no, everything that's designed, whether it's a computer or television, everything is just to have a nanosecond conversation about and then move on. And so there's no time to think or no willingness to think, and nobody seems to think that that's important to delve into an issue deeply. I find that stunning. I just find that the fact that so many people are surface people, and yes, they all know how to use a computer, they all know how to use technology, but they can't think for themselves. They don't understand concepts, and it's, again, being right is more important than being critical.
So if we ask the big question about the collapse of the Republic, we would probably agree that the Republic no longer exists, the U.S.
It's
Republic. It's gone.
So, Lord Alexander Tyler, you know, he's always been credited as saying that the life cycle of a democracy, and he was talking about the Athenian Republic, is about 200 years. Well, we're 230 years forward, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that you go from bondage to freedom and back to bondage, and it's always when one group of the people decide that they can steal from the treasury that everything goes off. And that started very big in the, you know, after the Federal Reserve came in.
Yes, and, 1913.
Right. And then in during the 1930s with Roosevelt.
Yeah. Well, there you had the idea of the transition from the Republic to the socialist state.
Right.
You know, and people will say, socialist, you're just using buzzwords. It's like the funny thing is those people are using buzzwords. You actually use a word that has a definition, and then they accuse you of using just buzzwords to elicit a response.
And I'm not saying that doing social good for society is bad or good.
Sure.
But that's not the issue. The issue is that once a group of people learn how to game the system, then there's a problem. The fact that we have Social Security is neither bad nor good. It's just how it's been played. The same thing with the Federal Reserve. Obviously, I think that's bad. But
yes.
But taxation in itself isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just how it's used.
How it's done.
Right.
I mean, if you assume the slave state, right? In other words, we own you. We let you keep X amount. That's why the Founding Fathers were so opposed to the income tax, part of the Communist Manifesto, one of the primary planks, a graduated income tax. It wasn't that our Founding Fathers were against all forms of taxation. They wrote taxation into the Constitution. There are legitimate, lawful ways to do it. But by converting things through the 16th Amendment, which some have argued never changed anything, in fact, it didn't, except this illusion that it did. And then it set the American people up as slaves to the state that were owned by the state and that were allowed to keep X percentage, rather than saying, oh, well, I only had to pay something. It's like, no, they let you keep the rest of it.
Right.
Because it's the basic assumption that you don't own you. You don't own the fruits of your labor.
Well, you know, again, it's how we look at everything. We always come from a conversation, but the conversation we have is that we don't have the right to be free. And we don't have the right to own what we have. Up until, I believe, 1868, the land that you owned was free and clear. It was yours. There was no taxation on that land. And the laws since have changed it so that we pay taxes on stuff, in theory, we own.
Yeah, there's
but we
a
pay
woman.
Taxes. Well, I just want to say we pay taxes on property we don't own, because if the bank owns it, why aren't they paying the taxes?
It's a good point. Now, the story recently, there was a 91-year-old woman who was evicted from her house. I don't know if you heard about this. Why? Because she was living in her son's house. It was paid up free and clear, but her son had stopped paying the property taxes on it. And so they evicted her. Now, if it was paid off free and clear, why is a tax still being paid on? People don't understand property. Real, if you own it, it cannot be taxed. But that is something so foreign. It's like, oh, of course, you own, you're on there, you have to pay. But no, they're holding title in some way. And they're charging you for holding something that you already, theoretically, if you will, own it. And so this is the kind of thing, I think the tax revolt, the uprising of the original colonies, we're so far beyond that at this point. Yet we're so devoid of the information because we've been taught not to think and not to ask questions critically again.
I think everyone should read the book Animal Farm.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is it's absolutely amazing that so few people have read it. You know, back in the day, I don't know if it was required reading, but I remember reading
it. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, when I was in school. But most people don't know the book. I think it's far more important than 1984, both written by George Orwell. But, you know, it goes to show that some animals are more equal than others.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with our government and people in power. And the wealthy certainly are in more equal than the rest of the people. And there's nothing wrong with wealth. It's when you game the system.
Sure, gaming the system, the level playing field gone, has been for a long time. Medical monopoly, greatest example, right in our face every day. And we talk about health and healing. You've helped thousands and thousands of people in your store coming to you. They've been given up for dead sometimes by their medical doctors. I know.
Correct.
I've been in your store before when people are coming in desperate straits. And you're like, well, you've seen it so many times, as have I, that it becomes, how do you know that? I just met you. But you know. You see the pattern emerge. And then you realize that the answers or solutions to these health crises is not more government. In fact, it exists in the health food stores with or without doctors. And they don't like, oh, well, you can't bypass that. Yes, you can, unless you believe in an authoritarian state.
Well, we don't make promises ever.
No, you can't. But,
no.
You know.
But we wouldn't do that because I don't like to create false hope. And I think that's very destructive when you make people believe something that may or may not be true in any area. But we give people the empowerment to improve themselves. And that's the most important thing. And we educate them. And then they see and we make them think a little bit. And that's one thing I've noticed a lot with people who come to Simply Natural or any, I guess, well, I'll just use Simply Natural, where a lot of people will say, you know, what the doctor's doing doesn't make sense, but he's the authoritarian figure, so I'll do it even though I wouldn't do it under any other circumstance, because it makes no sense.
Yeah.
And what we say to them is, well, if it doesn't make sense, why would you do it regardless of what uniform's telling you?
Yeah, but that's the restoration of the individual liberty. And if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right here on the Robert Scott Bell Show today with Richard Pearl. Also, Liam Sheff will be chiming in, the conspiracy realist. We're going to take a quick break. Yeah, I heard him. We're going to take a quick break here.
Can you take that propeller off his head?
No, he's very much like thinks he can fly away in the studio here. Listen, we got a lot more healing to do. We're going to talk economics as well. You want to hold on to your money? Do you know what money is? Richard Pearl's going to let us know, as well as some more health healing on different levels. Stay with us. Coming right back after this break.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. The information is so good, it requires no expiration date. The Robert Scott Bell Show.
This hour, testosterone abundance or proficiency disease on the air. Richard Pearl from Simply Natural. He's got his radio show. He's been doing for years, Pearls of Health, and much more. And, of course, Liam Sheff, the conspiracy realist. I want to shift gears a little bit, talk about economics. We're talking about restoring the republic. Of course, under the law of nations, if you do not have an independent treasury, you are not considered a real nation. And I don't know that we have an independent treasury anymore. I go back to the 1980s. I remember Ron Paul urged Ronald Reagan to reissue silver and gold denominated in, you know, dollars. They did the $1 silver pieces and they did $50 gold pieces, etc. And I think I think Ron Paul understood the law of nations. I don't think Reagan, until he was apprised of the situation, realized it went, holy tamale, we better do this fast.
Well, Ron, I don't know if we can do that.
Ron, I want you to distribute real money. If we don't have real money, we're going to end up in the pooper.
Well, I don't know. I have to fund those CIA wars. What am I going to fund them with?
Well, Liam, your awakening from paper money to silver gold, did that happen recently?
I had an experience recently where I decided to buy a little silver. Actually, I went into a bank with a friend of mine who nearly got us arrested by Homeland Security for talking about the trouble the country was in. And the banker was saying things like, if you don't like the country, why are you still here?
That's amazing.
Did you ask him why is he still here?
No, but the funny thing is we both said, hey, look, we're Americans. We were born here.
It's not the country we don't like.
Yeah, we love
the make-believe government.
That's right. And the government's not looking out for the people. Look at unemployment levels are ridiculous. People who can't afford health insurance is the highest level. Poverty is at the highest level. I mean, it's higher in 2010 numbers than 2009 numbers. And, of course, we're in 2011 now, so those numbers are probably worse still.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't matter because we protect one group of people, the investor class, at all cost. And I'm not saying we should be in some kind of class warfare, but you can't – if we were watching football, let's say we were watching the Jets just beat the hell out of the Dolphins – well, I like talking reality, sorry. But anyway, so let's say the Jets
are
like
pummeling. All right, sports fans, I love you.
So let's say they're pummeling the Dolphins. You still want the refs to be sincere. You want them to be honest so that whatever call they make,
it's based on the parameters, rules of the game.
Right.
And it's
you don't
applied
want them
equally.
To, you don't want them to pick one side or the other.
Right.
Yet we do that with our class warfare. We keep telling the poor in the middle, you know, that we shouldn't go after certain things that the wealthy have. But the way that we say it suggests that asking for something fair is wrong.
Mm.
And we're not talking about socialism or anything like that or communism. You know, these are stupid buzzwords. What I'm saying is that you can't give the rules are written by the wealthy for the benefit of the wealthy. So we can't leave it in that
sure.
Strength.
Well, case in point, the bailouts of the bankers started
right.
under Bush, then doubled down again under
right.
Obama. They could have written a check to every American. You want to stimulate the economy for I don't know how many tens of thousands of dollars. You want to have people spending money or getting out of debt. It would have been done, but rather they threw that money into these multinational banking corporations,
right.
foreign banks, foreign governments. And to whose benefit, really? Look, we're still mired in it, and it's getting worse.
Well, they could have even done this. They could have said, look, the government will pay half your mortgage for the next 2 years. You're not allowed to move. If you do, you have to pay that money back. That would have created a situation of stability in the banking, both for the banks themselves, because they knew their assets would hold a value because the government was stepping in some fashion. The other side would be that the people would feel wealthier. And if they feel wealthier, they're going to make better decisions, not out of emotion, and they wouldn't have held back in harmful ways. Now, there would be a consequence possibly to that, but at least the government would be giving to the people, which...
Far too reasonable.
Well, not only that, it wouldn't have helped the wealthiest few.
Sure.
Remember, the top 400 people, we're not talking about families, we're talking the 400 wealthiest people own more than the bottom 50% of the population. So if we have 310 million people, plus or minus, essentially, I don't know what the exact numbers would be, but if essentially 100 and some odd million people own less than 400 people.
Million, yeah, it's really astonishing to consider. And if we talk about the economics of it, what is the wake-up call or the rallying cry? I mean, I have argued that people in the health food industry potentially have more opportunity to see through the garbage because they, by and large, would be expected to eat better, detoxify their body. They can think, right, think clearly as such. Now, I know that's not everybody. A lot of people are still working on it. Was that part of your wake-up to recognize the Federal Reserve, the fiat money system, the international banksters, to wake up and see through it?
You know, it's an interesting question, but I think it's a little different, the answer. The answer is that I've always been questioning. Therefore, it shows up that I would go into nutrition because I'm questioning. I'd say, for instance, why would I take drugs? Why would I take chemicals and want foods with pesticides, insecticides, or vaccines or things like that? I would question what the value of those things are. So that would lead me into a direction which led me into nutrition and health in the health food industry. That same mindset would also make me look at money. I grew up as when I first got into business world, I was a stockbroker. Yet I don't particularly like stocks, and I certainly don't like paper currency, especially since it has no real value. It's just an agreed-upon belief system. So, and you could say that about gold or silver at a level, except that you can't just manufacture it at will or in thin air. Like you could go to the bank and get a loan, and the bank just made money or printed money in a sense. They just out of thin air said, okay, here's a $500,000 loan, but the money really doesn't exist, but they just created it. You can't do that with gold or silver. So the mindset that got me into nutrition is the same mindset that got me into thinking about values of money.
Right.
And what really is what we would consider money in true sense of the word. And the problem is that most people think that getting a piece of paper that has no real backing is valuable, and I say it isn't.
Well, and we're seeing the collapse of the fiat money system, and you mentioned history. I always like to learn from history. We talk about the collapse of republics. All the time we see the empire collapse as well, related to the economic collapse. In other words, they extend themselves too far. The Roman Empire just travels around the world, depletes all the resources, can no longer pay for the soldiers. Done. Over. Right? Decline.
Right.
And Congressman Paul, bless his heart, has been saying the same thing. It's like, learn from history. We cannot continue to be the policemen of the world. We can't be in 900 bases around the world, 150 countries, whatever it is now, and expect to remain prosperous, expect to remain free, expect to even defend ourselves.
But we're not prosperous. That's a storyline. You know, we were at the bank, and the banker said that this is the greatest country in the world. And that may or may not be true. It depends on your perspective. I believe if you live in another country, you might have a different view if you like that country.
Sure.
So I think that that's just a meaningless statement. But here's the bigger issue. If we're such a prosperous nation, then we wouldn't have, you know, 15% of the population plus in unemployment. We wouldn't have 15% plus needing medical care or not being able to afford it. We wouldn't have 15% of the population plus in poverty. So you can't, those two statements don't fit. You can't be prosperous and poor as a nation. You could be prosperous as individuals or groups,
sure,
but you can't be prosperous as a nation when a full 15 plus percent are in a bad way.
Liam, this is something that you have become very passionate about, too, this economic concerns, the collapse of the country and everything that goes with it. What's your perspective here?
Well, I only really care about myself. I'm trying to get out. I got an inflatable boat ready to go at any time. You pull the cord, you get out. I want to think about what our guest was talking about today. We're in the bank, and the guy's saying, oh, this is the great – I believe, he said.
Right.
This is a statement of faith. I still believe this is the greatest country in the world to live in. And we both sat there and said, Have you lived anywhere else? Have you been? Are you French? Are you Algerian? Are you from Brussels? Are you Chinese? Are you living in Hong Kong? You might think Hong Kong's the greatest place you've ever been. I had a great time there. It's not a matter of not loving the place that you're born or loving the woods or the wilderness in the place that you're, you know, from or having a sense of that. But let me make a proper analogy. It's like saying that McDonald's is the greatest restaurant in the world. It's the greatest, it's the most American restaurant, right?
Right.
It uses all of the fast food industry, it uses all the infrastructure, the factory farming infrastructure, the pesticide and antibiotic into the GMO fed cow, and then you chop that into a million pieces and infuse it with antibiotics, and then take stuff from 1,000 cows, scrape stuff off the walls, including the feces, and shove that into the fast food burrito.
That gives the extra flavor.
It's the greatest restaurant in the world. When people tell me America's the greatest country in the world, they think this is an article of faith. It's your country. You want to make it a better place. That's a different conversation, though. This other thing is an article of faith, and it gets in people's way of thinking critically, which is where you started with.
And the problem is that even if you believe, and even if it was accurate that this is the greatest country in the world, unless you maintain it, it's like anything else. You know, you don't maintain your lawn. After a while, it's not a beautiful lawn anymore. Mm. And I think that there's too much of this smug mentality that says, well, it's the greatest. But if you didn't contribute to it really being great, and that doesn't mean going to war. That's not what makes a country great, because that actually
– Well, unless you're Rick Santorum.
Well, I don't understand how this guy has a brain. in fact, I'm sure he doesn't.
No.
I have snails in the backyard that have better conversation.
Well, you remember he went after Ron Paul the other night in the debate because Ron actually acknowledged the concept of blowback, that, you know, you wouldn't like to be occupied if you were. You might be doing some stuff to unoccupy yourself.
You know what's really amazing? I was thinking about that earlier. If everyone stopped for a second, got all non-emotional for a second, ask yourself this. Would somebody from another country be more upset that you live a nice lifestyle, or would they be more upset that you're on their territory? And if they had a pick as a reason to attack you, wouldn't it make more sense that you're on their territory would trump the fact that they don't like your lifestyle?
Well, certainly, Michael Schur is his name from the CIA, and analyst. Thank
analyst-ister.
You. Analyst-ister. He has actually described
that?
It and said, yeah, well, was it like 98% of all suicide terrorism was stimulated by occupation? Not, oh, you're free and prosperous, and we're not prosperous. What's the argument there? They're looking at us and going, very funny, you Americans. You think you're prosperous. Not anymore.
Let's make the full analogy. Would you be more upset if you were living in a not great neighborhood in Los Angeles, Philadelphia, New York, and you had a not great neighborhood, some problems, a little crime, noisy neighbors, but you had your own TV and cable and internet, and it was relatively safe. You had your locks on the door. Would you be more upset if you lived there, and you knew there were billionaires living in the country? I mean, would you go out of your way to go kill the billionaires and blow up their house? Or to use Richard's, if you lived in the nicest house, doesn't matter, the nicest house in the country, but people just kept coming in when you didn't want them, which upsets you more? It's not a matter of them wanting our whatever, our iPods or our freedom. We parked in their mosques.
Yeah.
You know, park a Saudi tank in St. Patrick's Cathedral. You want to see a riot in New York? You know what I'm saying? It just invert it. Do it the whole way. It doesn't even have to be another country. Just take two social stratas in this country and play that same game. It's not that other people care or resent us for being – nobody resents anybody for being free. You resent people because their big toe is up your nose. Mm-hmm. Please get your toe out of my nose.
And not to mention, let's not forget that we support the dictators in these countries who oppress their own people. So you have a combination of they're being oppressed by our policies, our favoritism towards dictators, and the fact that we're parked in their backyard.
Yeah.
And I think that trumps everything else. I think the rest of it is stupid. I just, when I hear people say things that are just parroting other statements that are asinine, I just got to wonder, why aren't you stopping for a minute and thinking, this need to be emotionally satisfied with your feelings is insane. And we need to really look at things properly. And by the way, when I see people, like at the debate the other night, I heard some guy yell out, you know, when people who were not insured, they let them die or something
right,
like
were,
that.
Right, they were going cheering it.
Yeah, yeah. What I'm hearing is a lot of frustration in people. I don't think that they really feel that way, but I think that people are so frustrated
they
with
do.
Their lives.
It was Dick Cheney. He was in the
Oh, it was
well,
Dick
okay,
Cheney.
Well, you know, he had the mask on.
he hates everybody.
But, you know, but in general, people are so frustrated. I think it's simmering to the point where, you know, we're really at a very dangerous point. I don't know what the inflection will be, but there's we're at a dangerous point because there's so much frustration in people that they're acting or stating things irrationally or they're so emotional just so they'll feel good in the moment. And I wonder what Germany might have been like in the 1930s if it's not very – if it's so different.
Well, you're bringing up a very important point. We're going to, let's say, hit that and more on the Robert Scott Bell Show this hour. My guest, Richard Pearl, as well as the conspiracy realist, Liam Sheff, talking political healing, health freedom issues, and places in ways we can describe them very calmly, rationally. But yes, the powder keg, is it going to blow? Can it be avoided? That's part of the questions I'll be asking when we come back from this break. Stay with us.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. Scott Bell Show. Robert, Scott Bell.
Let's take a walk on the wild side.
Oh, righty then.
You're everywhere, baby. Radio, TV, the papers. Am I right or am I right or am I right?
Robert Scott Bell.
I don't even know how I can link to the stories we're covering. We're making the stories up as we go here. Richard Pearl is my guest. He's the guy I blame. I'm in radio because of him. He said, go, try it, young man. You can do it.
I was hoping you'd fail.
Yeah, well, it didn't work out that way. But Liam Sheff, the conspiracy realist, is with us. We're talking about all kinds of things. And yes, if there are links, and there are, they're up at robertscottbell.com, including all the links that you need to know about the news stories that we can and can't cover in the short 2 hours that we have every day here on Natural News Radio, naturalnewsradio.com. Please put your email in there. You'll get your daily updates. Also, a special shout out to the Prepper Podcast Network, who picked up the Robert Scott Bell Show at prepperpodcast.com. So, Richard, Liam, we got the powder keg we talked about, but I come back to the economics of it. If we have no ability, because what triggers the powder keg is suddenly nobody has any economic wherewithal to get anything.
Armageddon.
Yeah, well, and panic ensues. We see hyperinflation in Zimbabwe, wherever, Germany, the Weimar Republic. How do we store value? If you had a 401k, it was halved, and then it was halved again. What about the people who have talked like Ron Paul? He said gold, silver. How do you measure your ability to have something that's going to retain something?
Well, I think one of the most important things you have to look at is what has historically been stores of value. Furniture. I mean, there are Louis XVI furniture that's still around. Antiques are a store of value in general because they hold a value. They're perceived as value, and people want them. People make copies of them all the time. But in truth, a copy will lose value, but the real thing will maintain value. That's one aspect. Paintings, obviously, another. But something more commercial, more usable, friendly would be gold and silver. More so than diamonds. Diamonds, you have to figure out what you got, and there's one guy who calls it one thing and another calls it another. Jewelry, not so much, because jewelry, and this is something that a lot of you don't realize, the jewelry that you're wearing, it may be stamped 14 or 18 carat or 12 carat. It may not be that. In fact, most of the time it's not. Mm. Most of the time it's less than what's claimed. And it's a great way for a manufacturer to steal 15% on
it. It's like clipping coins. I mean,
yeah,
it's counterfeiting in a sense. But it's
back in the day, they used to kill you for that.
Sure.
That was actually
punishable offense by death.
Yeah, it was a capital offense.
Yeah.
So, but that's what it's doing, because why rob a bank when you can rob as a manufacturer?
In broad daylight, not having to get a getaway car. You can stay right there and keep doing business.
And by the way, all the department stores that sell jewelry know the game.
Mm-hmm.
All of them know it because they're buying the stuff. They test it themselves. They know it isn't what it's claimed.
Right.
And it happens with watches from name brands and so forth. So let's go back to real value. Real value for most people, for the masses, is gold and silver. Now, the majority of people don't own it. 1 or 2% of Americans own gold and silver. They're so happy to get rid of their metals because they need the money. But we really don't own it. The banks own a lot of it, or investment houses of some type, or the moneyed people own it, and they'll keep telling you how unimportant it is. But if you really look at money as money, it's more important to own ounces of gold and silver and add to those ounces each year than whether the price is one thing or another. The biggest thing we've got going on today is debt. It's the ugly word. It's the one that really matters. And it means that anything that is in paper currency tied to that debt is going to be devalued. And at some point, as a country, the confidence by the people diminishes to the level where the myth is known to all and no one trusts the money. Once that happens, then ultimately what ends up happening is you don't trust the money. You go into hyperinflation. It has nothing to do with, you know, the cost of manufacturing. It has to do with a loss of confidence. When we get to the point where we have loss of confidence in the currency, we have hyperinflation. So again, when you're looking at your life and your economics, don't measure things by how many dollars you have, because that's something that's man-made that can be printed in thin air.
Well, and again, I bring up the example of the collapse of 08, what happened to the stock market, 401ks were half, values right. were half, and then again, it happened again. And so if you said $100,000 used to sound like a lot, it's not as much anymore. That is what we talk about, inflation or let's say the devaluing of the currency. You could have a lot of digits, but what are they able to buy? And that's the point of ounces versus whatever denomination they give you.
And not to worry about whether you paid the right price or wrong price, because if it's up or down 10%, you're not doing anything with it anyway. You know, if you go back to 2001, August, gold was $268 an ounce. I don't remember what it was exactly in September, but I do remember that by December of the end of the year, actually after 9/11, it went up to 292. I do remember that. And then by the end of the year, it was 272. So in that four-month span, it didn't really change. Yet today, it's seven times the price, roughly. And what's significant is if you value the stock market or currency against that, if it took $270-odd dollars, single-dollar bills to buy an ounce back then, now it takes $1,800-and-some-odd dollars to buy the same ounce. Now, so that means that the currency is worth less. If you have $1 million back then, in terms of gold, it's only worth about $140,000 today. Mm-hmm. If you look at the stock market, if it was at $11,000 change today, and you divide it by seven, you're really at a tiny number.
So the numbers aren't that we're being given are kind of false inflated numbers to give you an illusion that it's holding value when it's not. What did you think when Ron Paul did the debate the other day when he held up the dime and said, hey, I can still get a gallon of gas for a dime? You know, and trying to, because Michelle Bachmann said, we can do it. We get it down to $2. He's like, I can do better. Here's a dime, silver dime. Buy over a gallon of gas right now.
That's right. And the point is, we don't know how to look at money. And so all these people who say to themselves, well, I got paper money. I'm wealthy. I'm worth this. I'm worth that. No, you're not. Hmm. And the only way to measure wealth at this point of our juncture as a world, because the world is sucking up debt like crazy, is to make sure that you have more ounces this year combined of gold and silver than you did last year, and to keep doing it. Now, as the metals, particularly gold, has gone up 10 straight years, it becomes more of a difficulty to do it. But imagine if each year you ended up with 10% more gold in ounces than you did the year before, and you have the price accumulation on top of it. That's a magical thing. Same thing with silver. Don't worry that, you know, one day it's $40, one day it's $38, one day it's $44. It's irrelevant. You're not buying it for, you know, an exchange. This is, so you can put it back into dollars. You're looking at, okay, this is a real asset.
Could we see, though, a restoration of the exchange of this kind of money? I know Ron Paul has proposed the Free Competition and Currency Act, where it would take out the monopoly of the Fed and say you can decide what you want to exchange in. Would then – see, right now, what they say, bad money after good, because of the monopoly – people want to hold on to what you're saying because they know that their wealth is valued in ounces and they don't want to exchange it all the time. But it used to be it was a normal occurrence to exchange gold and silver or the notes that were representative of them as opposed to fiat, which is different.
Right. And, you know, one of the reasons why there was the executive order back in 1933 was because there were all these redeemable notes. And back in 1931, the French bank took out all their gold. Or most of it, maybe not all of it, but most of it. And that put a problem in our situation where we didn't have gold to give to people. And then on top of that, people were running on the banks. And so the U.S. government was looking at it properly, not properly, but in a way where they said, okay, there's all these redeemable gold notes out there.
What are they called? Certificates?
Yeah, they
were
certificates.
Interesting distinction. It was a certificate which certified on demand,
on deposit,
existed, right?
Yeah.
And then they became notes, which seemed to be more evidences of debt than actual
But it was still on demand, so you could go to the bank and exchange it for gold coins. So they printed X amount of these, and there was more of these than there was actual gold available. So what Roosevelt did was he did the math, and he said, well, wait a second, we're having runs on banks, we're having runs on gold, we have to give to other countries. Remember, we didn't come off the gold standard until 1971, so we have to make monies available in gold to other countries, so let's get it from the citizenry. And that's what they did. Now, they took the people's treasure, and they gave it to the Federal Reserve, a private banking group.
They robbed the people.
They robbed the people to benefit a private group. And what's amazing about that is that the Treasury made the actual money, gave it to the Federal Reserve to sign off on it to create a debt structure, and then in exchange for a signature, we gave the country's wealth to these people. And we took back the worthless paper that we printed in the first place that we didn't need them to sign off on.
And again, we come back to what is the penalty for doing that? Right now, it's, you know, capital cronyism, whatever, and they continue to get rewarded for that. In the past, it would be pitchforks were coming for you.
Right. Money was, if you look at even from, like, say, 1860 to 1960, a stamp cost 3 cents.
100 years that lasted.
Yeah, in fact, we used to make 3 cent coins, silver 3 cent and nickel 3 cent. The first nickels were not 5 cent coins, but they were designed to pay for postage.
Mm-hmm.
The term nickel later became a 5 cent coin.
Yeah, interesting, fascinating history of coinage. And we go back to 1792, and Ron Paul brings this up from time to time. It was never repealed, the Coinage Act of 1792.
Right.
And suddenly, legal tender 1913, Federal Reserve Act, didn't repeal the Coinage Act of 1792, because Ron Paul, at every hearing now that he's on that chairman of that subcommittee, he says, can you define a dollar? Somebody, please, define a dollar. And none of the Fed people will define it.
Well, it's a unit of gold.
Right, but they won't define it, even though we know it's in law and has not been repealed, yet they try to prosecute people who actually utilize money as that is lawful and has never been overturned constitutionally.
Well, I find it's interesting also that they went after the guy who developed the Liberty Dollar.
Bernard von Nothaus.
Yeah, I can't even say that.
Yeah.
and what's amazing is that they said he was counterfeiting, but it doesn't look anything like our money, and it's worth a lot more than our money, so where's the value of the counterfeit?
I think that it was the awakening that they wanted to keep people from coming to the conclusion. Wait a second, what's real money here? That paper we print out and say you have to use it by legal tender? Or is it going back to the history of a lot of countries around the world, much less our own here in America, that gold and silver was the only thing to be made legal tender?
Well, you brought up in one of the segments that we were talking earlier about how the Romans, had
the clipping
lost their
of the
way.
Coins.
Well, they had lost their way. They went for treasure around the world.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, well, it wasn't just them. The Spanish did it. Portuguese did it.
The British
English
Empire,
did it.
Yeah.
Right, right. And they all did this at the loss of the structures in their own countries. We're doing the same thing. We're in 900 bases, plus or minus. We're in 130 plus or more countries. I think the number's higher than
yes,
what Ron Paul said.
Yeah.
I think it's closer to like 190.
It might be 170, 89. Yeah.
It's a big number.
It's a lot, yeah.
And we're spending all this money for the benefit of a select few people. You have to look and say, well, what have we gotten for all this? The people are suffering here. I mean, if the idea is to defend the value or the safety of the people, who's the bigger terrorist? Someone over 8,000 miles away or the banker who takes back your home?
Well, I think Jesus said something about that in the Bible, didn't he? About the bankers, the international money changers?
I don't know.
Jesus? There's a Mexican kid who got around in Galilee.
All right, I'll let you think about that on the break. We got to come back. We got one more segment to wrap up with.
See, the Jew and me just totally
Richard
threw that one
Pearl
out.
Richard Pearl and Liam Shep. We're going around and around, having a good time here on the Robert Scott Bell Show. Stay with us. Coming right back.
If you're looking for FDA-approved radio, you're listening to the wrong show. This is the Robert Scott Bell Show.
It's a long way to the top.
On bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom. Here's Robert.
Next hour on the Robert Scott Bell Show, Johnny Delirious returns. They're all on drugs. We're going to talk about the fact that Washington, D.C. uses more cocaine than any city on planet Earth. Yeah, exactly. And also, Dr. Rob Verkirk from the ANH, the Alliance for Natural Health Europe, he's going to tell you what we are about to lose in America because they've lost it in Europe. Supplement freedom, wave it bye-bye. We're going to see if we can salvage it here. But right now, the money changers came up as a last topic here this hour with Richard Pearl and Liam Sheff, the conspiracy realist. We're going into history here like nowhere else in media.
Okay.
Oh, is that for us?
Cue the...
Sorry.
Cue the sound guy.
Money. We're talking about money. We're talking.
Okay, you know, you threw me earlier when you started in with Jesus and the pinata and all that. I got lost there for a second. Now I understand where we're going with the where he overturned the tables, mm-hmm. and it wasn't because the food was bad.
Right. Right.
Okay.
I heard there was an early bird special. This is this is terrible.
If I survive this hour, we're going to have some interesting things. We'll be with Johnny Delirious.
Jesus overthrew, right? The historical Jesus. And
right.
Maybe we'll get...
No, it's good that you say the historical Jesus.
Exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right, from a
Well,
Jewish...
he said throw out the money changers. Did he not?
From a, but what was it? There was an occupation. Let's just look at history again. There's an occupation of a land. The Romans are occupying where? The Middle East. Maybe, hey, let's occupy the Middle East. We like it. The people there, they don't have any rights. We don't care about them. The English said the same thing. Well, Churchill, there's a great quote from Churchill about a Palestinian. I don't grant the Palestinian any more right to complain about the land we're taking any more than a dog, you know, to a manger. It's not the dog's manger. Out. So there's an historical bias against people in the Middle East occupying the right, living where they live.
Right.
So the Romans came in. We want to occupy this. Right. You control a lot of the ports in and around Turkey. Very important area historically. I mean, the world was the Mediterranean Sea. That was the world. So the Romans are occupying. The Jews there are saying, get off of my back. They're being taxed. They're being taxed. They're being taxed. A group, not just one, but a series of messiahs, meaning military leaders, rises. They all are promised to overthrow the Romans. Jesus historically was, if he existed historically, and don't turn off your radio, was just one of the guys who said, and why do you think they crucified him? He said, they're taking your money. He threw over the tables. He said, I don't come to bring peace. I come with a sword. I've had enough. This is our land.
And I think we're going through something similar here in our country with recognizing that it is the banksters, the fraudsters, the money changers. And by the way, when did they stop saying money changers, Richard?
In the 1870s, it was the English came up with the term capitalism. Mm-hmm. That's not part of the Constitution. This whole idea we're a capitalist society.
Yeah, there's no mention of it.
No,
in it was
never about capitalism. It was certain rights that were granted people just for existing.
It was about liberty, bottom line.
Well, liberty and all its in its crustaceans.
Sure,
so to speak.
Sure.
But the fact is, well, you're drawing a little sea.
No,
another crustacean? No.
We got
the seahorse here.
No, this is
the seahorse.
This is a woman with a gun saying, "Hands off my gold!" And then she uses an expletive.
Oh, that's very nice. It looks like. You know what it looks like? It could be a gun, but it could also be that thing that you put glue against the wall.
Check out Liam Sheff's site, liamsheff.com, for great art, comics, etc.
You
but,
keep going.
But I want to know. This is a fascinating historical perspective.
Where were we? The money changers. So the money changers, that term...
He's watching SpongeBob, by the way, right now. Attention deficit is
happening. Yeah, I never watched that. I'm waiting for the book.
Does SpongeBob, is he the one who turns people gay, or was that somebody else?
No, that was
no, that's
Barney,
the, purple
Barney the dinosaur.
No, it was Tinky Winky.
Tinky Winky?
What if
Send Michelle Bachman's husband over there.
What if Tinky Winky and SpongeBob got together for a show? It would be Armageddon.
Yeah,
no chill. Sunday.
Oh, my God.
But I would say, but I just want to go on record, Ren and Stimpy are still one of my favorites.
The money changers.
The money changers. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the money changers,
capitalism.
That's a bad name. The money lenders, money changers, that's a bad name. So they changed it to capitalism. It's almost Orwellian, except that Orwell wasn't existing at that point.
Yeah, pre-Orwellian.
Yeah, pre-Orwellian. And it's this idea that somehow capitalism... which is protected, it's not really true capitalism, is good for the masses at the expense of the masses.
This is great, and it's the equivalent of, I mean, the idea of capitalism is now equivalent with the red, white, and blue, and so we get the argument from the banker, oh, if you don't like it, we didn't say we didn't like the country, we don't like the frauds who actually pull the strings of the frauds who run for office. We're tired of the lies, we want the country back, we want it to be a sane place.
And capitalism is definitely different from free markets.
That's right.
Completely
different. Yeah. And I think, you know, Ron Paul made an interesting point when he talked about militarization, or military rather, and
versus defense.
Defense
versus militarism.
Right. And it's the same thing with capitalism
Versus free markets. You're right.
Versus free markets. It's the same idea. You know, capitalism is convoluted into making people think that it's free markets, but it has nothing to do with the free market.
Imagine if you had the right without permit to go to your downtown central, the square in your town, and sell stuff that you made, and no police could come along and hassle you, and you could charge what people would buy. You're then in a free market situation.
Well, we used to have that system here.
Yeah. No, that was something. It's like now they zone it out of existence. They go after lemonade stands.
Right.
They go after green tea smoothie stands. They go after the selling of raw milk,
right.
Real milk.
But it's good enough for the animal, but not good enough for you.
Right, yeah. In some states, including in Florida, where you can buy raw milk as long as you say you're going to give it to your animal.
Right, and it's in the pet section.
Mm-hmm.
But it's insane because why is it? Now, remember, that whole pasteurization process was developed in 1937, not because it was better for the person drinking it,
yeah.
but because it made the shelf life last longer. So it was about economics. Yeah. That's all most things are. And it has nothing to do with what's really in the best interests of the people.
Right. Well, exactly. So we talk about taking it out of the hands of the few, putting it in the many, but we're also not talking about mob rule. We're not talking about anarchy. I've argued that anarchy is already in existence because the government is in anarchy. It follows no rules. It makes it up as it goes along, and it doesn't allow you to care for your own body, your own children, your own family. And at that point, who's in anarchy, the people or the government?
Bonnie Flank, anarchist.
Well, you know, if you take it a step further, look how the progression has continued. It can only get worse. We're not – whatever belief system that we have that we own a fraction of our life, that's going to dissipate as well.
Mm-hmm.
The state owns everything, and it's going to get to the point – and we're comfortable as a people of being under authoritative rule. It's insane. Again, it goes back to critical thinking.
Yeah.
Let's not get emotional. Let's not look at these people from a soundbite standpoint. Let's not have somebody – give us a decision in advance, tell us who the favorite is or the front runner is or whatever, or who's not electable or who is. Let's ourselves decide that and not parrot things. When I watch people parrot things or listen to them parrot things, I stop them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just – I know we have no
real
time.
Real quick. Well,
okay. Just understand that sometimes commercials on TV, which are for things that you can't buy, are there to influence the content of the shows.
Yeah.
So be careful what you're being played into.
Absolutely. Listen, you mentioned Bill Maher, Real Time on HBO. He does something called overtime. I think we're going to have to do some overtime or extra innings or something.
Can I say? I think we're going to be trying something new on the – we're talking free markets. We're
yes.
going to be doing some extended episodes, unexpurgated, uncensored, not
unaired.
Necessarily radio-friendly, unaired, to be sold for an inexpensive download price. We're going to figure it all out. Extra innings.
If you can't get enough, there are going to be some extra innings. We'll start with my good friend Richard Pearl, and he's a guy. That's why I'm doing radio all those years ago. Who knew? And, of course, Liam Sheff, thank you for being here. As I said, next hour, they're all on drugs. They're in Washington, D.C. Also, the assault on supplements. It's not just here. Europe has already lost the battle. They're still fighting. Is it possible we're going to lose it here, too? Well, it's looking bad, but we're going to see. We'll talk to Rob Verkirk as well. In the meantime, on the Robert Scott Bell Show, the power to heal is yours. That's all I'm here to remind you of. We'll be back after the news. What am I saying? We are the news. We'll be back in just a minute.
The Robert Scott
the
Bell
Robert
Show.
Scott Bell Show.
The information on the Robert Scott Bell Show has not been approved by the Food and Drug Administration and is not intended to prevent, cure, treat, or diagnose any disease. Nah, just kidding. As far as we're concerned, the FDA can kiss our
ass. Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
Well, look at all these trillions of dollars debt, lost jobs, and foreclosed homes.
Did I do that?
You dug yourself a hole and you crawled in it.
Robert Scott Bell.
How did the Department of Homeland Security get into the medical business?
Joe, we have a potential pandemic.
A national health emergency.
The sky is falling. A piece of it just hit me on the head.
Robert Scott Bell. Scott Bell.
We will make this the most honest, ethical, and open Congress in history.
Is there any insanity in your family?
Do we have the power to tell people what they have to eat every day?
Senator Coburn,
today, Junior?
Taking on bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom and making sense out of medical propaganda. The voice of health, freedom, and liberty, Robert Scott Bell.
I sure hope you guys found that last hour as fascinating as I did, just riffing with Liam Sheff. And in fact, after the show today, we're going to record extra innings. We're going to see how we can make that available, because sometimes some topics are so fascinating we can't cover them in one single hour. But I've got a lot more to do this hour, and I barely have time to get to it all, so we're going to launch into that. But stay in touch, man. Get in touch with me through robertscottbell.com, and I'll send you the email alerts through naturalnewsradio.com, and we'll keep you up to date on all the happenings, all the new things that we're working on here. Very exciting. The message of health, freedom, and liberty is growing. So thank you for being here, robertscottbell.com. Now, in the few minutes I have before, we're going to go to Johnny Delirious and talk about all the all the drugs in Washington, D.C. We're also going to talk to a hero of mine, health freedom advocate in Europe. His name is Dr. Rob Verkerk. Rob's a fantastic PhD-type researcher, but he's also standing up for liberty in Europe, where they've lost most of it. And we're going to talk about what could be coming up for America if we don't pay attention and do something now. He's from the Alliance for Natural Health, so stand by for that. In the meantime, remember all those attacks on raw milk, how dangerous it is? It's going to kill everybody! Well, turns out kids who drink raw milk have less asthma. That's right, and less allergies. Oh my gosh! Call Dick Durbin. Get him on the line. We've got to ban this raw milk. It's curing disease without an appropriate license or approval from the FDA. Here's this is basically on FoxNews.com. It's covered by Reuters. But children who drink raw milk are less likely to develop asthma and allergies than those who stick to their safer. It's funny they put that pasteurized version, according to a large European study. See, we're going European this hour. Although the study isn't ironclad proof that the effects can be chalked up to raw milk itself, researchers believe certain milk proteins that are destroyed, they admit it, ha-ha, we got them, by heat could be helpful for children's developing immune systems. You see, they say, oh, raw milk, you don't need that, just pasteurize it. It's not going to change the content of the milk, but here we go, they admit it, it's destroying the milk. It's destroying kids' health, too, when they do that. They warn, however, that parents shouldn't start giving their kids raw milk. Why not? I give them to mine. The consumption of raw milk is a double-edged sword, according to George Loss. Yeah, he's losing his mind saying this. A researcher with the Swiss Tropical and Public Health Institute in Basel. It's not very tropical in Basel. I've been there. I think that's the home of some big pharmaceutical companies. They might not like you drinking raw milk. But he worked on the study. On one side, it's protective for the development of asthma and allergies, but on the other side, it may imply serious health risks due to harmful microorganisms. Tell all those people that we read about in the Bible that it's harmful, right? Ooh, too late. They're gone. Did they die of raw milk poisoning? No. They often lived to 90, 100, 150. I don't know how old they lived. A lot older than we live and sometimes today. But raw milk proponents, they claim that the drink has several health benefits, among them reducing asthma symptoms that aren't found in the pasteurized milk sold in most grocery stores. Well, that's what you found in your study. But little evidence. Oh, we don't have enough evidence. Doesn't matter that we've been drinking it that way for thousands of years. Unpasteurized milk, cheese, yogurt. It's dangerous. Yes, microflora. Again, these are dunderheaded idiots within the religion of science, which is not science at all, but a cult that is trying to drive you to consume antibiotics as if they're little candies with wrappers. Hey, chew the wrapper as well. Like, we'll put a little coating on it for you. Lots of food coloring in those pills, too. Last year, scientists from the CDC linked raw milk to a 2008 outbreak of E. coli that landed four people in the hospital. Okay, we'll see if that really happened. Did anybody die? No. The agency repeated the warning after learning of the current new study, which is published in the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology, right? So something positive comes out about raw milk, and the CDC has to act against it. Don't listen to that peer-reviewed published science. Could hurt you. Of course, if they don't like what it says, they want you to ignore it. Isn't that amazing? While it's possible to get foodborne illnesses from many different foods, raw milk is one of the riskiest of all. No, it's not. This is the propaganda that we have to counter here, and there's not enough time in the day to de-propagandize you enough. But since you're here, you're probably already there. You just need to let all those that aren't here yet welcome them on over here. This is where we've got to go back to the basics. This is the kind of thing that we've lost our mind, we've lost our marbles, but we're gaining them back again. The organic, unpasteurized whole foods of the Robert Scott Bell Show. And no, I'm not selling anybody. I'm just getting you the information so you know how, where, who, why, what to get it. And we're going to do some more of that. But first, we've got to tell you about all the drug addicts in Washington, D.C. with Johnny Delirious. Next, then, Rob Verker from the Alliance for Natural Health Europe joins me. We got to condense a lot more healing into the next three segments so we can fit it all in. So I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Say thanks to my sponsors. You are listening to the Robert Scott Bell Show.
Why do you listen to the Robert Scott Bell Show?
Bravery and integrity is amazing, and it's much needed.
I love, love, love your show.
I love the show, like all the things that you're doing with Mike Adams and all the writers at Natural News.
To be quite frank with you, I think the show is the biggest breath of fresh air we've found.
Call Robert now at 866-939-2355. That's 866-939-BELL.
What do you think? Call Robert now at 866-939-2355. That's 866-939-BELL.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
You know, what I've said over the years, talking about politicians in Washington, D.C. and what's gone wrong with this country, of course, we can tear apart a lot of different details, nuances and such. But when I yell it out, they're all on drugs. You think I'm kidding? No, I'm not. And in fact, Johnny Delirious, who I originally had on at the Survivalist Conference in Dallas, Texas, he's written a book about hepatitis C cured. And he has written also about extensively about the fact that a lot of the politicians in Washington, D.C. may be on drugs. I would say a lot of them are on FDA-approved drugs, but some of them are on the street drugs, known as including cocaine. I thought that cocaine went out with Miami Vice years ago, Johnny Delirious. What's going on?
Well, I'll tell you, when I read this study, it's a government study. They have the highest cocaine use in Washington, D.C. than any other state per capita, and they also have the highest alcohol abuse than any other state per capita. So it really got my attention because that was my problem. I didn't have a drug problem or an alcohol problem. I had a cocaine problem.
How would you describe this situation occurring even now? I mean, if we look economically, the rest of the country is pretty much tanking, but in Washington, D.C. or in the surrounding suburbs, property values are as high as ever. There's more money rolling in there. And of course, I think it's the artificial economy. But it really comes back to that, you know, you could have all the money in the world and not be happy and still be a cokehead, evidently.
Well, you know, it's interesting that they call it the District of Columbia. To me, it's the District of Cocaine. And because of that, I think that, you know, when I was doing cocaine, I thought everything was all right. But, you know, everything around me was being destroyed. And that's what's happening to our country. You know, a lot of people are saying we should quit our dependence on foreign oil.
Yeah.
I think we should quit our dependence on cocaine.
Well, certainly. I mean, and you know, when you were involved and had the addiction in this sense, it wasn't like you were on the street with a shopping cart. I mean, you were wearing the high-end Armani suits. I mean, and I see a lot of these power brokers there. They're doing this stuff behind the scenes. How many of them in Congress might be involved? How many even in the executive branch on up to the presidency? I mean, this is very common, the drug culture right there in the swampland.
Well, you know, I see myself, you know, in my bad days, and, you know, I quit since 1991. I've been totally straight of all mood-altering substances, mainly cocaine. That was my problem. But, you know, I look back and I look at them and I'm going, that's me. That's me right in the middle of it. Have them, you know, you see them with bug eyes or crying or, you know, they're all falling apart. They don't know what to do. Nothing makes sense. That's why. Most of them are on cocaine, and that's why I started Coke Free America, because I think that all politicians should be drug tested, just like the soldiers, just like the bean counters and the corporations.
Yeah, on your website, CokeFreeAmerica.com, you have a quote here that starts out the page. Fidel Castro promised Vladimir Putin and Hugo Chavez that he will cover America with white powder. It says that you think that he started with Washington, D.C. So you think that the foreign influences is not with guns, but it's with drugs.
Absolutely. Our minds are at stake, Robert. And that's not the first time that Fidel Castro said that. He said it way back in the early 80s and and 70s, but lately when they had that maneuver down there with Hugo Chavez and all those military maneuvers, he said it again, and I saw it on some Russian news sources. He said, yep, just like I told you, I will promise, I will cover America in white powder. And you know what? I think his prediction came true, and I think he stuck to his promise.
Well, you know, it's really insightful of you in referencing this, because, as I said, for years I've been saying this, there's nothing else that can explain what the hell is going on in Washington, D.C., unless these people are on drugs. And I mean, all kinds. Now, we're seeing the increase in prescription drug abuse. I mean, they're taking these really potent narcotic painkillers that are FDA approved and snorting them as well, like it was cocaine. But I think all of this is seemingly, there's no beginning and end anymore to it. And in this way, the takeover of the government, which I've acknowledged is no longer the de jure United States, it's a de facto government, had to be influenced by, you know, altering the chemistry of the people that go there.
Well, absolutely. The lines are blurred between legal and illegal drugs once you start down that road. You know, just anything to get you away from your immediate pain is what you're going to do. So, you know, they have their powder and their girls and everything, and all that's kind of kept hidden. But, you know, people like me that had problems with cocaine, I see right through it. I said, that's our problem. Mm-hmm. It's not the economy, stupid. It's the cocaine.
Wow. CokeFreeAmerica.com is an organization founded by Johnny Delirious. He's on with me now. He's to teach youth to avoid the insidious hypnotism of cocaine and drugs. A person on cocaine does not care what is happening. Does that sound like Washington, D.C. to you? Again, explaining the irrational by a rational statement here. You know, is like I said, I keep coming back, scratching my head. What human being would do what they do there unless they are on mind-altering substances chronically?
Well, I you know, all I can do is talk about myself, because I can't point my finger at any one particular politician or person. But, yeah. You know, in the beginning, in 1972, I did coke, and it helped me dance longer and love longer. I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. But you know what? It never got better, ever, ever got better, until at the very end, I actually destroyed the house I was renting. And, you know, I had to go to treatment.
Right.
I think all politicians should be drug tested. I think it should be a new constitutional amendment. And hey, if you test positive, you should go to treatment and then go back to Congress after you do your outpatient treatment. Mm-hmm. You know, just go to group every day and go back to Congress, whatever it takes.
So you're looking at this like Congressman Dr. Ron Paul looks at it, like it's a medical problem, not a criminal problem. These people are addicted, and there may be other deficiencies in their body, imbalances, emotional or otherwise. But just simply to throw a drug user in jail is not the solution, in your opinion.
Absolutely not the solution, because everybody who's doing drugs needs help. And the main thing that I'm trying to get across with CokeFreeAmerica.com is for the politicians to make a stand. Now that we're having this big political debate right now, we got a new election coming along. To someone, make a stand saying, all right, I'll be coke-free, I'll get drug tested randomly, I want it to be a new constitutional amendment. And then the youth can say, well, ho, that's somebody that really, you know, is speaking the truth, because the last thing that the youth want to hear, and I did when I was in high school, is the hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. You know, don't do as I do as I say. That doesn't go over well with youth. They're just going to do just the opposite.
Yeah, the kids can see through the hypocrisy, and of course they learn to take drugs from their parents and their politicians. And so what are we going to do here? Now, I don't know if this is tongue-in-cheek, honestly. You know, the idea that we should drug test every politician. I am not one that likes to violate civil or personal liberty, but if you're going to receive money from taxpayers, the way that they transfer wealth from the average people that are working to those that are living high on the hog and lavishly spending everybody else's money, I'm kind of going, yeah, Johnny, you may be onto something here, because if you had mandatory drug tests for politicians, probably we'd lose most of the House of Representatives and the Senate tomorrow.
No, but they don't have to leave their job. They go to treatment, and then they continue with their job. See, I grew up in a military town. And nowadays, all the sailors and airmen and all the foot soldiers, they have to be drug tested. Now, the colonels, the generals, the sergeants, they're not drug tested. the Fortune 500 bean counters are drug tested, but are the CEOs and the vice presidents drug tested? No. And I think that our leaders should set an example for our youth once and for all. That way they will avoid and know for a fact that drugs are dangerous. Your mind will get altered to a point where it's just going to be dangerous for you and society.
Well, I remember, you know, as they, let's say, assessed the security clearances of people, whether it be in Congress or CIA or whatever, they would assess your vulnerabilities. How vulnerable were you to suggestion, to, let's say, temptation by any other means, because they always found a way. And, of course, drugs are one of the easiest ways to kind of alter the mind. The CIA knew this through the use of LSD throughout the 20th century. This is a case in point here where you simply get these politicians hooked on drugs and you can have them do anything you want. They'll bend to your will. Again, explaining why the politicians in D.C. up to the executive branch have been selling out America to foreign interests for many decades now.
That's exactly right, because they don't have the willpower anymore. All they have is their immediate concern, and that's, you know, looking at their watch, wondering when they're going to get out, either do their next line or, you know, sneak around the corner to get with, you know, whoever, just to carry on with. That's really what drugs do to you. And the hypnotic effect of cocaine will absolutely paralyze the most intelligent mind, and to the point that you think you're okay. Just like, you know, have you ever seen people at parties? Because I was a designated driver, and they just say, "Oh, I'm fine, I'm fine." But no, let you know, Johnny drive you home. So I drive them home, and they're saying everything is fine, but the next day they don't remember a thing.
Right. Yeah, well, it's a great delusion of the chemicals talking in your body and taking over, and then opening yourself to the power of other people's suggestion, whims, or whatever, and then you're not fit to serve in government and lead anyone or anything, although for a while people are able to fake it, right? They're able to kind of put it aside and pretend and walk the walk in a way that people don't detect it. Do you have some sort of radar detector that you can actually see these behaviors? Are there ways to detect it without having a drug test?
Well, sometimes you have to be there to see it, but I just want to say this, that when I ran that laboratory, I couldn't get out of the house without a big line of cocaine because, you know, a cup of coffee just did not work. The lab did very well. We passed all our CLIA tests, our Clinical License Association of America. They could come in at any time, just like OSHA to a restaurant. They could close us down if they found anything wrong with our methodologies or procedures. I had that thing running top notch. All the lab techs did their job, our reports every month. We even sold our methodologies and procedures to NASA. So we were top notch. However, Johnny was not. His personal life, and, you know, it just, you know, like I said, I destroyed the house I was living in. So when I see some of this behavior that's going on, you know, they do their job, yet I can see that they're, you know, they're falling apart on the inside. Mm. And so it's hard to see unless you've been there, and you just have to have been there to see it.
So, Johnny, what kind of method can you do? I mean, this is obviously a hard sell because certainly the government people themselves do not want to subject themselves to be caught and found out and exposed. So how do you gather the people? Because this would have to be a grassroots people thing to demand. You want to run for office? Fine. You want to be in government? Fine. But you're going to get tested. We don't want anybody on coke or other medicines that are going to alter your ability to think clearly and open you up to powers of suggestion from foreign interests that are not our own.
Well, that's why I'm coming out with this right now, because we're in a big political debate. We've got, you know, the election coming up in, you know, a little over a year from now. There's all kinds of things being tossed around. Who's going to run? Who's not going to run? What's valid and what's not? I think it's totally valid to, you know, for some of these candidates who want to become and set, you know, send a message to say, hey, I can make a difference. Well, okay. Where my button, cokefreeamerica.com, you know, Coke Free America, you know, that's what I think is really the issue here, is to get some of these new candidates that say they can make a real difference in Washington. Well, okay, if you could really make a difference in Washington, do you want it to be a Coke Free America? Mm. That's my big question.
Well, it's a fascinating thing that you've opened up here, Johnny, and I'm really pleased to know that there are more people awake and saying, hey, yeah, drugs are a danger, and in this case, certainly what may be the greatest danger to the Republic, because the people in charge of it, supposedly running it, if they're on these drugs, it explains so much about their willingness or their lack of will. Willingness to sell America out, as I said, or a lack of will in protecting and defending it, as they swear that oath to uphold and defend the Constitution, which does not allow for multinational corporations to come in and take us over. So this is a big, big issue, Johnny, that you've stumbled on. I don't know if you stumbled. Well, listen, you stumbled through it. You got out. You got clean, and you're helping others. Briefly, before I need to take a break and go here, there's so much going on. Your book, Hepatitis C Cured, this is something that people don't understand that how bad people's livers are being hammered, whether they're doing illicit drugs or not. The simple act of being exposed to environmental toxins, additives, preservatives, colorings, flavorings, pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, all of these things work to damage our liver insidiously, slowly over time. So even a person who's never done a drug in their life could be subjected to one day finding out that they have hepatitis.
Well, that's exactly true. And, you know, whether it's getting off drugs or doing drugs, you know, that's the biggest danger. You'll pick up other diseases. And once you pick up hepatitis C, you better be virulent about getting rid of it. Otherwise, it's going to stay and stay until it finally destroys you. So my whole solution, you know, especially for these kids, is good liver health.
Yes.
You have good liver health, you won't want the drugs. Conversely,
correct,
if you're hooked to drugs, you better watch your liver, because your liver is going down fast.
You're right. Johnny, the liver is a key to all healing, according to Chinese medicine. For thousands of years, they've been saying this. Also, it's a seat of addiction. People don't realize that, along with pancreatic health. So you're definitely onto it. The Delirious Cure is the book, Hepatitis C Cured, by Johnny Delirious. How can they get? I've got the links up at robertscottbell.com to you and your website, including Coke Free America. Is there also a toll-free number, a number people can call, or is the best thing to do to send them through the web?
Send them through the web, either hepatitiscured.com or cokefreeamerica.com. Those are my two portals.
Well, I hope you'll stay in touch with me as this progresses. It's a fascinating rallying cry. Drug test the bastards. Come on. Let's do it.
Why not? What's wrong with it? I mean, you know, if you really want to make a difference in America and be a elected, respected official, especially to our youth, set an example and get drug tested, random drug tests, a new constitutional amendment.
All right, Johnny Delirious, you are a wild one. We love you. I appreciate all that you're doing. Get his book, Hepatitis C Cured. I've got all the links up at robertscottbell.com. If you have an opinion or perspective on Johnny's idea to drug test all politicians in office in Washington, D.C., and hell of bureaucrats, too, while you're at it, give me a call at 866-939-BELL. Let me know what you think. Coming up next, one of my health freedom heroes, Dr. Rob Verkert from the Alliance for Natural Health Europe. Stay with me.
Scott Bell Show.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast.
Robert. He is tenacious, isn't he?
He's a brave and a decent man. He's a pioneer.
Bell. This message must be read in every newspaper, heard on every radio, seen on every television.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Longtime listeners to the Robert Scott Bell Show know how much I respect the Alliance for Natural Health, but many of you in America may not realize there's an Alliance for Natural Health in Europe that have been fighting incredible battles and with a lot more disadvantages because they don't have the same freedoms that we have still here in America. We've got a special guest right now from ANH Europe. His name is Dr. Rob Verkert. He's brilliant. He's done incredible work with the team over there. I'm so happy to introduce him to you now. Dr. Rob Verkert, welcome to the Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert, it's fantastic to be on your program. Really glad to offer you some snippets of what's happening in Europe and how that relates to the American people.
Well, that's what I wanted to hear. We talked to Daryl from ANH USA yesterday about some of the battles on two fronts, be it the Dick Durbin bill, be it the regulations coming out from the Deschet law back from 1994, what the FDA is doing there. But what has happened in Europe, because this is a kind of a pretense, if you will, of what may be happening here. They're trying to duplicate it.
Well, yeah, you know, coming back to what Daryl was saying yesterday, the fact is that if you look either at the Durbin bill or you look at the new dietary ingredient guidance that the FDA has produced, which is just really more about implementing the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, that's been sitting there lying in wait, ready to cause harm to the natural products industry. Those pieces are really taken from a jigsaw puzzle that has spent a lot longer developing over in Europe. And it's an extraordinary process when you work really on both sides of the pond looking at what is happening. And for us, it makes it absolutely essential that you quash these initiatives that are occurring in the U.S. What we have in Europe is basically a complex pattern of a whole series of laws that are effectively replacing the sovereignty that each individual European country had for many years. So you've had countries like, we can't even call them countries in Europe anymore, they're referred to as member states. So, but countries like the UK and the Netherlands having very liberal regimes where if you went into a health store over there, you would find in the past pretty similar kinds of products that you would find in the US. All that is changing at a very, very rapid pace now as a whole series of regulations and directives are starting to be fully implemented. Many of them were passed several years ago. One of the reasons that the European people, by and large, let it happen is they didn't see any particular harm occurring. They were given a lot of spin about the benefits of these pieces of legislation. They were told very much this is about protecting the public. That is the kind of message that the European regulator is putting out all the time, and they love to dig out very occasional and isolated stories where there may be some incident. Often it's very, very severely and heavily trumped up.
Right.
It's fed out into the media. It then hits all the bureaucrats and the elected representatives in the European parliaments and the national parliament. And essentially you've got this now, this extraordinary system of control that is regulating everything from the ingredient within natural health products through to the claims, what you can say about those products, and now even the dosages of ingredients that are allowed. It basically sets a borderline between what is considered food and what is considered a drug, and essentially therapeutic natural health products are very, very much at risk in Europe.
Well, Dr. Verker, you said something very frightening, that there are no more countries in Europe. It's like, wait a second. Oh, supranational organizations, pharmaceutical industrial complex, United Nations, World Health Organizations, these are the things that were labeled conspiracy talk many years ago and even more recently. And you're living through the fact that there's the dissolution of individual sovereign states or countries under an umbrella that is supranational. And that seems to have a lot of linkage into the growth of the pharmaceutical industry worldwide and controlling governments and limiting competition to their drugs.
Yeah, look, absolutely. There's an extraordinary playoff going on between the food industry and the pharmaceutical industry in terms of creating a global trading environment via a series of trading blocks to allow them to do what they do best, which is deliver very low-quality foods to a very large number of people that pretty much ensures that they all get sick, particularly with chronic diseases, and the solution is supposedly pharmaceutical drugs. It's become the mainstay to the system, and it's now the imposition of these pharmaceutical standards on natural health products that, if you like, starts to pose such an extraordinarily difficult obstacle to actually putting products on the market. Fundamentally,
right,
in the past, you were allowed to put these products on the market as a category of food where they were presumed safe. What is happening in Europe is that you are moving to a situation where you have to get pre-authorization before you can put the product on the market, and that is built into. That's why the draft guidance on new dietary ingredients is so critical, why it needs to be quashed in the United States now.
Right.
Because what it can do is do exactly what we have in Europe, which is effectively say that a very large number of the ingredients that are selling already within dietary supplements in the United States are new dietary ingredients, and they need to come off the market unless the manufacturer, supplier, or even retailer, which is quite an absurd concept in itself, can provide sufficient data that proves safety. And that is effectively turning around the burden of proof. It is moving towards a drug licensing system, but being clever enough to not actually call it that.
Right.
And it is nothing less than sleight of hand.
We're talking with Dr. Rob Burkirk from the Alliance for Natural Health Europe. He's in America for a short time, and we got him, and this is so exciting to have you on board here. The warning is this has happened in Europe already. They're fighting to regain something that they've lost. Here in America, we still have the supplements, but they're very much on the precipice because of people like Dick Durbin, who believe there's no such thing as a safe dietary supplement. And so they want pre-market authorization or approval, much like drugs. And it is untenable, is unaffordable in a time when our economy is in shambles. It would wipe out billions of dollars of the U.S. economy. One of the greatest, brightest spots of the U.S. economy is the dietary supplement industry, still growing despite a lot of challenges to the economy. This will put a halt to that as well. Do we need it? No, we don't even need it. But on economic grounds, it could be argued, much less the freedom grounds for which we stand here at the Robert Scott Bell Show. Dr. Verkirk, the issue in Europe, were there, of course, we know in America, despite Dick Durbin, there weren't a lot of adverse events or deaths at all coming from dietary supplements. Was there some kind of massive outbreak of contaminated substances in health food stores in Europe that prompted this movement, or was this moral lines of UN Codex Alimentarius playing itself out?
Yeah, there has been extraordinarily few cases. There is no doubt if you look at the overall data on the hazards caused by dietary supplements versus foods versus drugs, wherever you look, on average, dietary supplements end up being about 1,000 times safer than the average food and about 100,000 times safer than the average drug. There are a few cases. For example, we've got now a very stringent piece of medicinal law in Europe that is attempting to medicalize most botanical herbal products. And the trigger for doing that was really one case of medical doctors selling a bunch of drugs alongside a few Chinese herbs as a part of a slimming clinic. And over 130 people got very sick. More than 30 developed sarcomas. And it was blamed on Aristolochia. And Aristolochia, as you know, is a Chinese and Indian herb that has aristolochic acids, can be hazardous.
Right.
The fascinating thing is that there have been three court cases taken by the victims of these doctors. The doctors have walked away scot-free, as doctors so often do when they have malpractice.
Yes.
But the whole thing has been blamed on Aristolochia, has generated this massive piece of European legislation, but three court cases now have been unable to prove any linkage between Aristolochia and the harmful effects. And there have been a number of pharmacologists who've been looking at this for more than 20 years because it occurred back in 1990. And it seems now that the primary problem was almost associated with the a combination of drugs acting together and was nothing to do with the botanical products whatsoever.
Well, in Europe, you have thousands of years of recorded history, I believe, of herbal plant medicinals as a basis for medicine on the continent there, much less in the United Kingdom as well. And here we are in a younger country in America, only 200-plus years old, and yet in the last 100 years, we've seen an abandonment, slow but subtle and over time gotten more powerful, of the history in natural medicine, homeopathic medicine, etc. In Europe, thousands of more years of history, how were they so efficient and effective at basically abandoning these herbs, attacking them, making it to the point where you would have to get them approved by a drug methodologies in order to have them remain on the market, much less get put back on the market?
Yeah, you know, the fundamental issue is that what is happening is the rights of the individual to self-care to manage. Yes, we used to run our healthcare through local communities, and there would be a herbalist and doctors that would offer individualized healthcare for particular individuals.
Right.
All of that now has been replaced in a very, very short span of time, so that we have somehow allowed this reliance on new-to-nature molecules, B built around patents that have made the pharmaceutical industry the mighty industry that it is today, all controlling. And I think the key thing is that people have been made to feel disempowered by the situation that's developed around them, where governments are controlling what they can do, what they can buy, how they can look after their bodies. And the reality is that we still are empowered. We can choose what we do in our lives. We can choose if we want to go to the drugstore and fill ourselves up with drugs, or go to the supermarket and fill ourselves up with junk foods and processed foods. But we can also do it differently. We can manage our own health using really healthy foods and concentrated sources of nutrients like dietary supplements. And in doing that, we are immediately massively reducing the demand for the stuff that is killing us, whether it's overuse of pharmaceuticals or bad quality foods.
Well, is that not the point then of the regulators to basically protect the interests of the pharmaceutical complex, so to speak? I mean, it's like IG Farben never really left.
Well, it is, of course. There is a revolving door that's been demonstrated time and time again between the pharma companies and the regulators. But we can also choose to step out of that environment. The one thing that the regulators haven't found how to control is high-quality foods that are being grown at a community level that can be bought from farmers' markets. One of the reasons that we see in many Western countries now farmers' markets really taking hold is because consumers are going there and buying their food there. They realize they feel better when they buy foods like that. They feel better both physically, they feel better emotionally, and they know that they're supporting community growers, and right. That makes all the difference. The quality of those foods has got to be, even where it isn't necessarily certified as organic, it's often better than the
sure.
certified organic food that's turning up in the major supermarket.
Well, and that's a strange irony, because as we're waking to that here in America, the FDA is finding ways to do multi-jurisdictional raids and attacks on local producers of raw products, like raw dairy products as such. Listen, we're going to take a break. Dr. Rob Verkert from Alliance for Natural Health Europe is with us. One more segment wrapping up today's show. Fascinating discussion as we talk about things across the pond, as they say here. And we're going to be right back with more of that after this.
Giving the pharmaceutical industry cardiac arrest.
Clear.
It's the Robert Scott Bell Show. In the health world through the power of radio, it's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
Continuing on here with Dr. Rob Verkert from the Alliance for Natural Health in Europe, and he's on U.S. soil right now while we can conduct this interview, get together on this. Now, there are a lot of people that we work with in mutually here, like Jonathan Emord, who's known as the FDA Dragon Slayer, and he's one of my heroes in the health freedom movement, of course. And many people are working on so many levels behind the scenes as well. You as a scientist, you know, I'm privy to some information about some of the amazing work that you do over there in Europe to salvage what is salvageable and hopefully restore some level of freedom. You know, the vision that we would have is one where we could access these supplements without government interference. We don't want to deceive anybody. We don't want to use force or fraud. Yet on the other side of the coin, so to speak, it seems that force and fraud is the way to go about it. Yet they claim that what we do is not efficient, effective, and is dangerous. And it's kind of the complete polar opposite to reality.
Well, exactly. And of course, they will continue to try and force us into believing that we're a minority of people that are using untested and dangerous materials to do dangerous things with our body. But let's take a close look at this. We can all sit around having dinner with each other, and you start to begin to see the sheer differences in the way in which different choices of diet and lifestyle play out as you get older. And I'm finding it increasingly interesting when you're sitting there with regulators who are deeply opposed to the free dispensing of natural health products, and you're sitting around people who are often obese, are often suffering type 2 diabetes, certainly don't look healthy.
And they're not often happy people either. It's not that they love their jobs.
They love their jobs, or they love their pay packets.
Yeah.
And I think it's becoming more and more interesting. I mean, from a scientific point of view, what we're very convinced of is that the system has been skewed in such a way that only a certain type of evidence is used to make decisions. And this type of evidence is very costly and very difficult to accrue. What we're really missing is a scientific explanation for the evidence of what we often refer to as total effect. It's the total effect of all the things that we do in our lives, the choices that we make in terms of how we look after our bodies, how we, how active we are, what kind of activities we engage in, how we handle relaxation. Put all of that together, and it really affects not only our health, but it also affects our psychological well-being and our quality of life. If we start to have scientific markers for that, and there are really the beginnings of some very interesting work in this area, and this is one of the areas that we in the Alliance for Natural Health are increasingly focusing on, we will start to see really the ability to shift people into a kind of compulsory direction towards natural health. I mean, we have a situation where
there
are all sorts of excuses that are being offered to us, and these excuses will just melt in the way of very compulsive evidence for change.
I understand. So the evidence, we're not forcing people. Again, we're not into forcing, although I'd like to force the regulators to back off. That's the kind of force I understand. The people, you know, rising up to say, enough, you've overstepped your bounds. Now, here in the United States, that's very clear. I'm not as familiar with the European system. They may not have the same levels of protection. Having interviewed Jonathan Ebord many times over the years, we talk about the differences or distinction between a European model for regulation versus the American model, although we are rapidly approaching the European model here.
Yeah, there are some fundamental differences. What we're seeing is more and more elements of the European model. You still, fortunately, have the First Amendment.
Right.
But actually, there are elements that the FDA is engaged in around the scientific substantiation of health claims that could very seriously impinge the First Amendment rights. And that's one of the reasons with Jonathan that the case was taken on the FDA's decision to ban the selenium and cancer risk reduction claim that they just decided to just remove on the basis of what they consider to be a new piece of evidence. And, you know, these are going to be continuing processes where, if we're not careful, our ability to be able to talk openly and honestly about plausible evidence of the beneficial effects of nutrients just will not be able to be made. And in Europe, we have this concept of Napoleonic law, where you're effectively guilty unless proven innocent.
Right.
And what they're effectively doing as of next year is banning any type of health claim about the health benefit of any food or food ingredient unless you're able to prove, using human studies, a causal relationship between the consumption of that food and a health benefit. Now, that might sound to some listeners quite straightforward. In practice, it's very, very difficult, and it also removes a whole bunch of things that are just straight common sense. If we take, for example, the antioxidant value of, say, berry fruits, you walk into a shop and you see a berry fruit juice selling, you would expect to see, you know, this product is an antioxidant written somewhere. In Europe, the word antioxidant will not be able to be used next year unless you're being able to show via human clinical studies that those berry fruits actually have an in vivo effect, an effect on the consumer.
It seems absurd the level to which they're trying to deny what should be patently obvious even without scientific evidence at this point.
Yeah, and of course, well, what we've already seen is that the berry fruit antioxidant claim dossiers that were submitted for consideration, because they didn't have either any clinical evidence or sufficient clinical evidence, they have all been rejected. So as we stand today, next year, you will not be able to make any kind of antioxidant claim for any berry fruit.
Now, it's not that the regulators are denying the presence of antioxidants in the berry fruit. It's just they're saying, well, there's no in vivo evidence that it has any use at all. Then why eat food?
Precisely. And they're also saying we want the studies done on healthy people. So we take the relationship between, say, glucosamine and joint health.
Right.
They're saying, yeah, we've looked at all those studies. Thank you very much for submitting them. But now we've looked at them, we see that you've conducted your studies on people with things like knee osteoarthritis.
The people who needed it.
And we'll only accept them if the studies have been done on healthy people. Because you've done it on people with knee osteoarthritis, actually your product's a medicine. Oh. And when we're looking at health claims for foods, we need the studies done on healthy people.
This is enraging. I mean, I try to be above the fray, but...
It is the greatest infringement on freedom of speech in the field of healthcare that has occurred anywhere in the world, as far as we've seen. It is extraordinary. And that is that the time bomb has been set back from 2007 when this piece of law came in. It applies across all 27 member states in Europe. It affects 500 million people.
So are we going to see secessionist movements within the European Union for freedom to be restored, or is this all going to be resolved in the courts? What's your perspective?
Well, at the moment, because botanicals, in the field of plant materials, botanicals, 95% of all claims that have been submitted on botanicals have been rejected by the European Food Safety Authority that's evaluating the claims, 95%. So what's happened, because of huge pressure, they're now reevaluating the scientific evidence that they've used. We've seen this kind of approach before. It may be beneficial, it may not. And of course, I should say laughable if it wasn't so serious. Part of all of this is actually the big food companies were actually major drivers behind this legislation. And of course, it's turned out now in such a way that even they will lose out because of the difficulty of making claims, irrespective of the amount of evidence they already have. And now they are jumping up and down saying there's something wrong here.
Well, I would say it serves them right, but it serves the people wrong because they need the information. And, of course, that's what we're only talking about, the free flow of information. And this is the threats that we have domestically, as we talked to Daryl Rogers yesterday on the program about the Durbin bill and also the implementation of certain aspects of DSHEA that would basically make every new ingredient after 1994 subject to similar requirements of pre-market authorization as if it were a drug.
Precisely. And we have that in Europe. The date isn't 1994. The date is 15th of May, 1997, and it's called the Novel Food Regulation. But it's the same principle. So it is many people in Europe, because the situation is looking so dire, are talking about civil disobedience. Companies are talking about civil disobedience, about saying, hey, let's just keep this stuff on the market, making these claims that we've always made that have been fined under our national laws. Now we've got these EU laws that don't make any sense. Let's just keep making them and see what happens.
This is the concept of nullification. We have that here under the 10th Amendment. Those things that are not explicitly provided for the federal government to do are reserved to the states and the people, respectively. And there is a big movement on for nullification, and it sounds like they've picked up on Nullify Now in Europe. And I'm really thrilled to hear, because I think that ultimately that's maybe the only course of action left.
It is. And, I think if you could substitute every European for every American, it would happen overnight. Mm-hmm. I think that the difficulty, there are big psychological differences between Europeans and Americans.
Right.
You've got to understand that Europeans have been occupied by the Nazi power in many people's recent history. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, one of the reasons that this situation has developed and got so far is because people have accepted that regulators can do this and can control the rights
of individuals.
It can be one step too far. And I think in this area of particularly of health claims on foods, this may be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Right. Food freedom, health freedom. These are fundamental freedoms to being a human. And all around the world, I want to support everybody's efforts to do that. And Dr. Rob Verkerk of the Alliance for Natural Health in Europe, I'm grateful for all your efforts. Those of my listeners, there are listeners in Europe. I have a number of them from the UK and other on the continent as well. The Natural News Radio Network has a far reach, and Natural News people are reading that all over the world. So if we have listeners there that are catching this program, how can they support the ANH in Europe?
They can come onto our website, go to www.anh-europe.org. And you'll see a Get Involved page, you'll see a Donate page. We are a donation-funded organization. Everything we do is based on funding. We are in the process of developing a major legal action against the system that's developing. We've actually already raised sufficient money for the first stage. We will be raising more money. That will be very clear on our website. One of the key things we ask people to do is raise awareness. There is a huge amount of information on our website. Take the articles, forward them, pass them out to friends, get onto our Facebook page, which you can find at Alliance for Natural Health International, and please get involved, communicate the information. There is quite a problem with misinformation out there on particular issues such as Codex. Codex is a massive problem, but it's not the same kind of problem that is often depicted by certain people with websites. So get accurate information, inform yourself, inform others, and let's make change together.
Absolutely. Dr. Rob Verkirk, thank you for stopping by the Robert Scott Bell Show. I'm so pleased that I could introduce you to all of my listeners. What a wonderful team you have there in Europe, as well as those in working the American side of things. We support you wholeheartedly, and I encourage everybody to check out the websites and do what you can to support them. Dr. Verkirk, all the best as you continue and safe journey home as well.
Robert, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure being on your program.
Right, and he's here to remind you, as am I, that the power to heal is yours.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.